Gordon Liddy is my muse. Mother Treason. 6. That club, it tumbled the rest of the year. I'll add a Russian metaphor. Thaw brings impassable mud. Sci-fi spy calls 1985 the year of the spooked. At summer's start, one of our midlife cowards, named John A. Walker Jr., was turned in by his wife for selling out the U.S. Navy to their 3 million stooges. Not for politics, just cash. At summer's end, one of their midlife cowards, named Vitaly Yurchenko, walked into the astonished arms of our Keystone Ops. Importantly, Yurchenko was a very high stooge of the KGB's first chief directorate's operations department. One of Trifia's compadres? Again, Yurchenko sold out not for politics, just cash. Soon, Yurchenko was singing low comedy to our side. It was suggested that the American Chancery Building I'd shown to Zofia that night in Moscow was more bugged than Moosehead Lake. Soon after, it was revealed to our Keystoners that one of our junior ops in clandestine services, a soulless bumbler named Edward Lee Howard, was selling out our Moscow station. Again, not for politics, just cash. He actually buried it in the Arizona desert. And, of course, hormones. It was funny enough, but then our Keystoners bungled the pursuit of the coward Mr. Howard so badly that he vanished into the desert, a freelance clown until he wandered into the Stooges' care in June 1986 at Vienna. There was worse. Spy dust in Moscow, a British-run Moscow mole in jeopardy, a KGB-run Washington mole at the NSA. But let that pass. I've made my point. Mud season. Tip knew none of this. Neither did you. Nor am I making this up. I couldn't plot such farce. I did wonder, when Yurchenko's subsequent escape from our ops and repatriation of the Stooges turned up on TV, how it might play in Moscow. It played slapstick here, since Yurchenko strolled out of a Georgetown restaurant like an addict rethinking detox. TV provided more fun the following year, when the Marine guards at our Moscow embassy were accused of, with Comrade Matahari. The embassy was subsequently emptied of its native staff and declared so penetrated that visiting State Secretary Schultz had to debrief in a big van. Why all this might be important is that I was suddenly back in Moscow in January 1987 for the weirdest confab yet fashioned by the Cold War. The Ministry of Culture had invited every Western media nabob they could persuade to come over and hobnob with Gorbachev. I was a late invited guest, asked overnight to replace a real writer, perhaps because I was outselling Comrade Sontag, Allende, and Mailer combined behind the Iron Curtain. I didn't have time to write ahead. I called Trifia and Tina's apartment as soon as I was bunked at the Rossiya. I thought nothing when there was no answer. They owed me a return Christmas present, but I'd had a VCR tape of their Black Sea vacation the previous summer, so we were almost even. The breathless schedule of the lit crit clack didn't permit me to call again until the second afternoon. Still, nothing. And I was annoyed. I figured the babushkas were refusing to pick up, and answering machines don't yet suit Russia's sense of caution. I assumed Trifia was away, and Tina was off being glamorous. By Friday, after an eerie display of East-West gang snobbery at a reception in the Great Kremlin Palace, think of Livia Logan as a Lenin Prize, Zofia Brandes as a Pulitzer, I was dreading another mass sup with my kindred of capitalism. One anecdote does for all. I was eavesdropping when this sensational sci-fi spy guy Gore Vidal proposed that America and Russia, both northern-homed, convene an alliance to combat the clattering of the Third World to the south. The Reds loved it. So did I. With one wry proposition, I presume he was kidding, Mr. Vidal had uncovered a certain profound Soviet contempt for law. As for the more sincere flirting around me, I don't despise the two-faced Sontag crowd too enough. I just don't understand their apologia for the bad guys, and my ignorance slips toward rude thoughts. You don't pet with the Kremlin. The Reds never apologize. Have you ever heard the Communist Party apologize to just one of the uncountable dead, destroyed and missing in its 7 decades of devilment? Show me the letter. Gorbachev in Italian suits and his French remade wife were the same old secret policemen. I knew a secret policeman. He was a friend of mine. Trufia never apologized, and I was almost proud of him for that, and I was almost adjusted to the fact that we were never going to talk candidly about his treachery. Then it was the weekend. No answer in Moscow should mean they were at the dacha, so I rang through twice without result. This meant nothing. But then, trapped at the hotel by the brutal cold that winter, and with incorrigible compatriots whose idea of Saturday night was skulking around with celebrity dissidents, I decided it was okay to be very bold. I called the Pelikan family apartment. Mama answered. I had not spoken with her in nearly 20 years and was affectionate but formal, saying how much I missed seeing her, that I hoped it was not presumptuous to call. Mama listened without comment. I added that I wanted to leave a message for Trifia and Tina. Mama said, "Yes, comrade. What message?" "In town, leaving Monday. Love to all," I closed. "I'll tell him," said Mama. "My love to your mama, Tipya."